Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the program. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is Rick the Poet Warrior. Rick has just published his new book, Kill the Rich. Good morning, Rick, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you.
Maybe we can start with a little background info. Who is Rick the Poet Warrior?
Well, I'm Canadian, first off, so I don't know if that'll matter to your listeners that much. And
well, they listen to me, and I'm obviously...
I'm born Canadian, grew up in a family of five. My background's like in computer programming and that, and I had a good career in that, but I gave that up about 15 years ago because I was just frustrated with the continual changing and having to learn every week, having to learn a new system. So, and since then, I've been writing and living on the streets.
Splendid. It's interesting. My background was computers, and I too became very jaded with the whole industry. You know, it used to be one where you could actually earn a pretty decent living, but then these days there seems to be a computer expert on every street corner. Where does the poet warrior bit fit in?
Well, I have some other books I've written, and most of my writing is of a political nature. I don't write like too much on the love, and like the kind of poetry I write isn't romanticism or classical or anything. Although I sometimes use those styles, it's basically I write political statements, either anti-government or anti-corporate, and that's basically I'm sort of warrior against the establishment, I guess. And also, I read somewhere, I can't remember whose biography offhand, but all good poets should be warriors for the cause. I don't know what the cause is, but
I'm one of those people that reads absolutely everything in and on a book, and I noticed on the back cover you allude to being a streaker. What's the story there?
Yeah, I'm sorry it's not more excitement. I wasn't running around nude. There was a company in Canada that was sold office supplies, and they used mobile vans, like big bread trucks with a big yellow streaker on the side. So that was my streaker claim to fame.
Oh, that's a shame. I was looking for something much more juicy.
Yeah.
I actually had a friend who was Oxford's first official streaker, and he ran down the main street of Oxford naked, and his chase vehicle was a Volkswagen Bug that had a papier-mâché penis on the roof.
Well, I'm sorry I haven't done that. The only time I speak is from the bedroom to the shower.
You also spent some time in Egypt, I understand.
Yes, I worked with a peacekeeping force there, a multinational force and observers. I doubt not too many people know about it. They were formed to keep the Camp David Accord between Israel and Egypt, and it's a little multinational army. It's a strange little place, I'll tell you, because it's like its own world with its own rules. It's not governed by the UN. It's not governed by NATO. It's not governed by anybody. There's 12 different countries that all have a little piece of the say in it, and basically, I think it's a money channel for the Israeli and the Egyptian armies, actually.
Like How on earth did you get involved in it?
Well, the back in the starting of the computer days, you know, there weren't that many operating systems. There wasn't, you know, it was more business orientated. So I had worked for a company, Wang. I don't know, Wang Computers, which is...
Oh, I know Wang.
Yeah, Wang. Yeah, you'd have to be a bit older to know them. But anyways, they had a policy that they would pick, you know, they would rotate their computer guy from a different country every year. So Canada came up, and then I guess my name was on a headhunter's file with Wang experience, and I was single, so I had the two biggest qualifications. So they offered me the job, and I took it. It was a great time for me. I got to travel all through Israel and Egypt and get paid for it. So I'll take another job like that if anybody.
Right. You know, talking about computers, the first system I worked on was an IBM 360.
Yeah.
I go way back.
I know.
Obviously, Kill the Rich is not your first foray into the world of writing. You said you have, what, three other books?
Yeah, I have three other books of poetry. I have one called How to Write Prosperly, which is sort of an attack on the literature courses at the given university. And then I also have my throat's gone.
No problem.
And then I also have Call 9-1, which is a book about mainly corporate malfeasance and you know, like how they grab people's pensions and how they manipulate society and that. And I have another book called You Look Fat, Calgary, which is basically it's about greed and both public and corporate greed and the effects on the city.
Oh, was that Calgary that you said?
Well, yes, Calgary, the city of Calgary. I lived in Calgary for 7 years, so I felt I could attack them.
Oh, off and on, I've lived in the city. When were you last there?
Oh, it was 1980.
Oh, in fact, I moved to Calgary in 1980.
Oh, well, we might be neighbors.
Yes, we could very well have been neighbors. In fact, on the subject of neighbors, I got an email about 2 or 3 months ago. Someone had been checking around on Google News. I also do investigative journalism. And they came across one of my articles, and they wrote to me and said, "Are you the Simon Barrett that used to live on Whitefield Drive?" And it was my ex next door neighbor.
Well, there you go. Hey, see, this is what happens with public exposure. All your skeletons can come out of the closet.
That's right. Tell us a little bit about Kill the Rich. What is the reader going to find when they open it up?
Well, I think they'll find that there's somebody's angry. it's a sort of a rant, I guess, like the word you like to use against the established corporate world. I guess that's going on today. I feel like it's out of control. I mean, obviously, the U.S. has had some problems with their, banking system, and this isn't the first time. I can't believe you guys are going through it again. Like, they had the savings and loan debacle in '90, and that didn't teach you a lesson, so they're at it again. So now these corporations are so big that like the effects on them, like, you know, like the government can't let them fail, so you can see that now. And so they're pretty well controlling the economies, and my problem with that is that they have such privileges and such power that it's hard, like, unless we do something to curtail them pretty quickly, it really will be sort of a corporate run world. I know a lot of corporate money now goes into the you know, through back doors and everything goes into the political system. But they've gotten pretty well out of hand now. They don't even try to, you know, I was trying to say is they don't even try to hide stuff anymore. You know, they just, the lies are bigger and they don't even, like I was saying, they don't try to even disguise that they're going to screw us in them. You know, so I don't know. I just went on about giving some examples of, I mean, sure, everybody's had them that's had to deal with a large corporation anyways, about, you know, people's pensions being lost or their medical not being valid.
Right. The latest news to break on the whole banking debacle here is Goldman Sachs, who now apparently, you know, could see the potential for the whole thing imploding. So they kind of bet on the fact that it would implode, and they'd still make money.
Yeah, right? They don't care. I think to me it's like having the, you know, the tiger loose in the room or something, and nobody wants to corral it. They're just all standing against the wall, taking their turn being eaten. And, you know, they pretty well know they can get away with anything these days. So they do. And then they go, mea culpa. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were doing that. You know, and then you never even see a name put to any of these, or a face put to any of, you know, these disasters that come about. And that's one thing that, really bothers me. I'd like to see somebody stand up and take blame. I mean, they're all up front when they have to take credit, but I'd like to see somebody actually take blame for something that's happened. And Goldman Sachs is no friend of mine. They were chasing me down because I had the Goldman Sachs XXX.site, so they got upset with that. So I changed it to Goldman Sucks. And I haven't heard back from them about that.
It sounds to me like not only are you a bit of an activist on paper, but you're an activist in life.
Yeah, I try to do a bit. Eh? I'm planning to go. Like, we have the G8 summit in Canada this year, so I do a bit of protesting. Last time I was I got beaten along with a bunch of other citizens. It was actually quite disgusting. And what happened in our Quebec summit was the police lost their mind a bit, but of course didn't see much of it on the media. But I mean, they were pushing Granny out of the park. It was really quite sad, actually. So big men pushing little ladies around. So there you go. But that's they're all like you know, dressed in black with, you can't see their face. You can't, and then they're coming at you with clubs and shields. You don't really have much choice.
Wow.
there was a lot of Quebec people that were really disgusted, but nothing much happened about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's funny the way these things get swept under the rug.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you've been in, well, you're obviously in the media business, but you know, being at the event and seeing what happened and listening to the media and getting their side of it, you can definitely... That's all you have to do is, like, I think anybody, if they want to see what really goes on, go join any one of these protests of any kind. It doesn't matter whether you want to protest immigration or protest religion or protest anything. But once you go to that and see the reactions by the police or by whoever's in charge there, you'll have them and see the news media report afterward. You'll wonder if the news media was even there. Because they're rarely to think of a fair-sighted picture of it. So.
Right. I tend to follow a couple of pretty high-profile cases, and they're on national TV almost every day, right, in some shape or form. And, you know, I watch the coverage, I read the coverage online, and I'm going... They're not talking about the same damn case.
No, I know. No. It seems like they're at a different party altogether a lot of times.
That's right.
And Simon, you know, that's all part of like, I don't care if you want to call it collusion or conspiracy or whatever you want to call it, but these guys aren't stupid, you know. They didn't get rich by being stupid, so they know exactly what they do, and they own the media, like, they manage the internet, so it's pretty hard to get a message out that's not suppressed or not, you know, doesn't matter whether you have the truth or not. You know, it's like, it won't set you free these days, it'll set you into quicksand.
Right. One of the things I hate is big media, because what's happened over the past couple of decades is that these companies have got larger and larger, and you can look at a fairly big market, you know, a city with maybe a million plus people, and what you find is that it's the same media company that runs the TV, the radio, and the newspaper.
Right. Same in Canada.
There is no independent reporting.
No.
You know, and all of these companies have their own slant. So it's very easy for a story to get conveniently lost, or at least buried in, you know, on somewhere deep inside the paper that no one's ever going to read.
That's true. And then also, what are the things that irritates me these days is that, you know, they always have these official sounding, organizations that, you know, that sound like they're going to help us, like, you know, Americans for a Cleaner America, you know, well, that sounds great, you know, and then you find out it's actually the oil cartel that's financing it, and it's half the stuff they're saying is BS anyway. So many of these organizations really aren't anything grassroots. They're all politically backed, and they're all, you know, financially backed by the companies. And
right.
So when they get these experts come on from, you know, I watched like a CNN panel or something the other day, you know, three experts, but they're all three experts from, you know, none of them were experts from, you know, independent. They were all experts from different, committees that are their organizations that were formed to plow the company line. So.
Oh, yes.
You guys should be going nuts. Like, you guys, I don't understand the Americans, like sometimes the American people. Like, I would have thought by now you would have been storming the British BP oil and burning down their buildings, you know, and take these guys out into the street. You know, like, it was only a matter of time for the disaster in the Gulf to happen. And now they don't even have any real, you know, real plans ready in hand for it. So, see, they don't even bother to try because they know the government will cover it, and we end up paying for it again. So.
Right. And actually, what's going on there is a lot of finger-pointing. The rig itself was owned and operated by a company, you know, so the oil company's saying, hey, it's not our fault.
And that's another trick they've been using. Like, if you look at all the corporate structures that changed over the last 20 years, and now, you know, this outsourcing is bullshit, it's outsourcing responsibility, but, you know, they own parts of the company, you know, maybe they lease it to the, you know, but if you look, I'm sure if you look at the financials of these guys, they own pieces of this and they own pieces of that. So even if they lose on one, they win on the other. But it's nice to be able to say, oh, yeah, look, BP only markets the oil. We don't actually deliver it, or we don't actually, pump it out of the ground, and we don't, build the rigs, you know. So we're never responsible for anything. You know?
Right.
That's what they do. They've all turned themselves into these marketers with outsourcing, so they have no responsibility. They're having a good time.
Kill the Rich, you already said, was written with a good deal of anger. What made you decide to write it?
Well, I wanted to write something I usually write in poetic form, but it's hard to cover. It's hard to, if you're trying to put something to poetry, like, you can't cover a lot of subjects sometimes. Sometimes something just doesn't work. So I decided I wanted to get out a lot of the, like, I thought the poetry was maybe making a strike, so I thought maybe if I put the message out in just plain text, people would read it, and I thought the title was catchy enough that I'd get people thinking about this stuff, or maybe excite them enough to do something.
Do you have a website?
Yes, it's www.rickthepoetwarrior.com.
Okay, and where can people buy copies of Kill the Rich?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and I imagine it's on a few other sites, so they can get it through my site.
I love rants. I really do, and it's one of the book genres that that I genuinely seek out. And Kill the Rich is right up there with the best of them. Even better is your choice to be somewhat liberal with your spelling and grammar, and that actually doesn't detract from the story. It adds to it. It gives you a real feeling of the urgency behind your message. Was that your intention?
Yes, it was part of it. I thought, I don't consider, like, English grammar, I don't know where it's going to be. Like, I wouldn't want to be the man responsible for defining the rules, because we're learning to communicate in a different way these days. People are, overlook spelling errors and bad grammar and that to go into a message, because they know not everybody, is 100%, I guess, as far as their capabilities to use the English language. And I think the public's more accepting of, misspellings and that. And also, I was sort of urgent. I did want to make it, I did sort of write it quickly, too. It was written, over a, 2-week period in a sort of intense sort of fever sort of thing. And so after I'd finished it and I reread it, I thought there wasn't much I should change in it, because that's how I felt.
Right. In fact, in some ways, it sort of reminded me of a string of emails,
Yes.
I get emails like that every day,
Yes, it is sort of, yes, it's, you could almost say that. It's almost like a review of an anti-establishment blog site or something. It does have that sort of way, because it doesn't, I try to group subjects into some sort of general category, but it's hard to be, I give specific examples of stuff, but I found it hard to, expand on any one area, because it just sounded like more and more of the same bad example, and I think people have had enough of their own examples of this stuff happening to them. Like, everybody I talk to has had some run-in with either, hit the government wall or hit the corporate wall, where they're just, asked to jump through 20 hoops to get their phone hooked up or to, get a repair done to their car or something.
Oh, yes.
So I didn't think I had to fill it up. I could have filled it with more examples and that, but I didn't think it was necessary.
Oh, no, I think the way you have done it, it's kind of lean and mean.
Yeah, lean and mean. That was the idea, lean and mean. No pork part, yeah.
What kind of reader feedback are you getting about it?
Well, people are saying that they agree with what I say and stuff. I haven't heard anybody disagree with it, but... everybody is, I guess I'm in the same boat, what do we do next, it's a hard, it's sort of like that gives you a problem, and then there's no, clear-cut solution, other than maybe what the title says, most of the time, people have said, that the Reddit has said, that expresses some of the feelings I have. They don't always agree with, maybe by use of language. I've heard some things about the use of language because some people, but other than that, most of them agree with it, and then what do we do next? I'm not even sure myself.
I really enjoyed your idea about annexing Switzerland. Did you want to share that with our audience?
Well, yes, okay. Well, I thought because, you know, with our laws and our society structure, you know, you can't really just go and start shooting the rich in the head. So obviously any plan that has that as the basis that isn't going to sell. So my idea was that instead we just gather them all up. They're only supposed to be a small percent of the population anyways, and we dump them in Switzerland, which is as good a place as any. Let them serve, and then keep them in a small contained area, it's all full of caves, and then wall them in there. And let them stay there, and they're all happy with their, they'll have their ski resort, and they'll have their little chalets, and everybody can be happy.
In fact, you also have an idea on who you could get to build the wall.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, I thought maybe because the Chinese are good at building walls, so I thought maybe we could have them wall it in for us.
I have to admit that when I read that section, I just rolled on the floor laughing.
Well, I was trying to, you know, that's the other thing. I was trying to put some humor into it. I mean, it's like, it's whenever you get into some of these subjects after a while, you know, it's sort of, writing stuff like that is hard on, it was hard on me anyways. I mean, I was depressed after I wrote the book. You know, I went into a bit of depression, basically, because it seemed like, it seemed very futile, like, you know, whether it would, you know, the whole venture. But,
There is, on a serious note, that there is a huge amount of disparity in the world. What is the solution?
I think the title of the book's the solution. It's not, you know, I don't know. Like I said, you know, I don't know that it was. I don't think we need these guys anymore. You know, like, you know, it's like in all societies, things have their time, right? And feudal lords and corporate feudal lords, if they want to call themselves, their time has come. You know, for the Americans. Not like, I know they hate to hear the word socialist, but Jesus, you're a socialist state. What the hell do you call bailing out the banks and bailing out the health companies and bailing out everybody else every time they go under? You know, that's the same as a socialist state does. That's what they do. You've been doing that for 25 years, 30 years now. So it's sort of ironic that you have this big anti-socialism movement in the U.S. and yet your own government practices have been reinforcing that sort of good structure all along, and you're pretty well socialist, whether you like it or not. I know you don't like. Yeah, I don't want to say the C word because they go, "Oh, communist." Ooh. You know, but most people don't even know. I don't know what they teach in American schools, but I know in Canadian schools they don't teach much about political history. So most people are very naive as to what, you know, communism was or that. It maybe wasn't the best system, but, you know, compared by side by side, that, you know, even free markets is not that good. If you're going to judge it on morals and, fairness all around, you know, the U.S. has some big, big problems. You know, there's outside the disparity between the, rich and poor, you also got, huge immigration issues to deal with. You've got parts of your country that are totally, you know, or I don't know if they're totally wiped out, but, or look like war zones. You go to Detroit, it looks like somebody went through with a bomb. I know they've been cleaning it up the last couple of years, but my God, Detroit, I've seen bombed out villages in the Middle East that look better than Detroit.
Some neighborhoods. Indeed.
You know, so I don't know what the American, you know, it, I know in Canada, you know, I don't think a lot, I'm not trying to knock Canadians too much, but I don't think a lot of us in one sense, because, you know, we're just like hind tit suckers, you know, whatever, you know, if the U.S. says jump, we'll jump, or if Britain says jump, we'll jump, you know, because in Canada, everybody, we've got it made, we've never been bombed, we've never, you know, if you're starving in Canada, you're a real idiot. I mean, you don't deserve to live. I'm not trying to be cruel, but you must have some real problem, because there's no way to go hungry in Canada. Even if you're down and out, there's some organization chasing you down to make you better, you know. So, and you know, we're pretty soft. Like we're probably the easiest target in the world right now. I think you'd roll in on top of us with a marshmallow and fold.
The book business is a frustrating one. Was it difficult finding a publisher?
No, not these days. You know, online, the online publishers, you know, you get to choose. I didn't have any problems having with the publisher. And I'd say this Outskirts Press, they did a good job. They're good at marketing and everything, support. So they were good with me as far as like discussing all the aspects of the book. So I didn't find too much problem finding one. It's the aftermarket is the harder part.
Right. And what are you doing by way of marketing?
I'm doing nothing. I'm terrible. I'm doing a bit of emailing and a couple of press releases, Simon, but I'm not. I know it's hard to build. Maybe I'm outgoing, but I don't really like being out in the public that much, or being out in front of large crowds and that sort of thing. I'll talk to people, or I can do that, but I'm not after any sort of claim to fame or anything. I just sort of it was more to get it off my chest. So my marketing efforts have been pretty poor.
You must be, you know, I talk to authors virtually every day, and I can honestly say you're the first one that has said, I'm not doing anything.
well, that's not, I'm not trying to kill the book or anything, you know, I'm not trying to, my motivation wasn't just to sell the, like, money doesn't really motivate me. I mean, I got to eat like everybody else, but not a big mover for me in that. I'm trying to figure out, like, if I can make some kind of contribution that'll help somebody. So that's really what I was trying to do. And I tried even with the book. I didn't make it too long, so the price would stay low. And I just have to get this stuff off my chest. So.
Do you have any future book plans?
Yeah, I got another. Actually, I got another one. One in the works. This is called What You Should Know About Banff. I don't know. You know Banff, Alberta?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Banff, Banff actually is, we've made it an acronym for Beware Eat Nothing for Free. Because I've lived in Banff, and it's one of those resort-rich towns. It's like, you guys have the comedy show South Park, that plays on the, American resort town actually, if Banff is our Canadian version of that, it'd be North Park. And it's the same sort of thing, that's more to do with like a book. Also, it's actually politically structured too, and I'm after the companies that damage the parks and the environment, and, but all in the good name of promotion, the public good, but it's actually pretty damaging with some of the things that are going on in the background. And of course, like I said, in our case in Canada, the government just has no power to do anything against them anyway. They're done in Alberta, they don't care to anyway. They're pretty liberal as far as the courts do what they want.
When is that slated for publication?
That one is hopefully this fall.
Oh, well, I do hope you will keep in touch with me. Seeing as I have been to Banff many times,
yeah.
I would enjoy reading it.
Yeah, I'll send you a new okay.
Alas, our time is up. My producer is whining in my ear.
No problem.
Rick, I want to really thank you for taking time out today and talking with me. And I want to wish you every success with Kill the Rich.
Great. Thank you very much, Simon, and I've enjoyed talking to you, too.
Okay, you have yourself a wonderful day. And to our listeners, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great day. And we will be back soon. Okay, goodbye.